season of the One Board Podcast is brought to you by Bellwether Games. Discover joy when you play one of their expanding lineup of fun and diverse games. Bellwether Games are both high quality and enjoyable for the whole family. Visit bellwethergames.com to explore all their titles and find a new addition for your collection today. Welcome to One Board Podcast, the podcast where we explore the family side of gaming. This is Ryan Gutowski, and joining me, as always, is Rick White, the inventor, actually, of the gigantic meeple. It's a meeple that you can hug physically. It's like humans. It's a lifelike meeple.
Yes.
Okay. Rick is the inventor of that.
Yes. So it reminds you, it kind of comes off of the idea of wrestling buddies. Do you remember those back in the day? Did you ever have a wrestling buddy?
I do remember wrestling buddies. I actually got one. Yeah, I do remember those.
Yeah, I had a Hulk Hogan one. Yes, they were essentially just, you know, stuffed, almost people-shaped, you know, little, I guess you couldn't really call them anything more than a doll. But the one thing I remember is that for some reason, they put a nose on him. Like, everything else was just, like, a solid piece of fabric, except for some reason, Hulk Hogan's nose. It needed to be its own little addition on
in case you ever want to bite it off.
Yeah, I guess, you know? So. But we used to throw around the wrestling buddy, like, for real, until, you know, until I ended up being younger and smaller than most everybody else, and then I became the human wrestling buddy because, you know, I, you know, wiggled and responded and struggled, so that seemed to make my friends think that that was more fun. Okay, now that I've got that dark, you know, memory from my past up, you know, let's keep going with the podcast.
Yes, definitely. We will do that. So, Rick, how are you doing this week, man?
I'm not doing too bad. A little busy. Soccer season is wrapping up, but in doing so, we've got 7 games in over the course of like 10 days, or not 10 days, more than that, but still, I think 15 days. Yeah. So 7 games in 15 days. It's kind of crowded.
Okay.
How about you? How's it going over there in Columbus?
It's a lot of games. It is going well. It's raining a little bit, so we are staying inside. We're playing some games. Actually, I'm taking a break from gaming to do some podcasting, then back to gaming. Aaron has our copy of Azul on the table ready for me to go as soon as I'm finished here.
That sounds awesome. Yeah, we are trying to do the same thing. Sarah's doing an event right now, so hopefully when she comes back, we'll do some games. And Wrigley is joining me for the podcast today because he does not like thunder. And therefore, he is just hanging out, laying next to me.
Nice, nice. So guest co-host Wrigley the dog.
Yes.
Good, good. So so what have you been playing, Rick? Anything fun? Anything exciting?
With a busy schedule, I actually wasn't able to get anything to the table this week, which is a little bit disappointing. I did have 2 board game trades that I did via Board Game Geek, so I can talk about those, I guess. One of them, I traded Yardmaster, which was one of my first reviews. A good game.
That's right. That's a train. Yeah, a train game.
Right. And it's a good game. And Sarah was actually pretty frustrated that I traded it away. But I ended up trading it for a copy of Photosynthesis, which is a game I've wanted to get my hands on. You know, did you do a review for that game, I believe?
Yes, Photosynthesis. We reviewed it on One Board Family, and it is a great game. I love that one.
Yeah, and so Yardmaster, we just seem to find that, and maybe it's just kind of the phase of gaming that we're in, but we've been doing a lot more board games and less card games. So right now, I figured Photosynthesis might be a game that we get to the table a little more often than Yardmaster. And then another trade that I did was Blood of an Englishman, which is a game I've only played once. It's a decent 2-player game, but I don't know that it's one that Sarah would enjoy. So I traded that for a game called Little Circuses, which looks to be kind of a worker placement, kind of economics engine management game, sort of kind of where you run like your own section of circus. Just some of the elements of it got me interested, but I still have some things that I need to look at, you know, go over the rules and try to break it out sometime soon. But that was a pretty good trade. Both of the trades, you know, normally I don't do trades that I have to mail stuff because it just ends up costing almost as much to buy, to ship things as it would to buy the game from Amazon and get the Prime shipping. But these two were just kind of heavily swinging my way and the people wanted to do them. So those are two games I'm looking forward to getting on the table sometime soon.
Good. Sounds like you got some good deals, man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this week, haven't played a lot. Played some Monopoly Deal at work. That was actually, if you read, wrote a story, basically like a little opinion piece, last summer, I guess. It was basically talking about how a gaming group spawned up out of a couple coworkers meeting and playing games of Monopoly Deal, which is a card game. This is honestly probably the best copy of Monopoly. Monopoly Deal has you with a hand of cards. Each turn, you draw two cards off the top of the deck. You've got things like Pass Go. Pass Go allows you to pick up two new cards. You have a hand limit of seven, and you're taking three actions. You can either play an action card, or you can put some money on the table in your little bank area, or you can put down a card for real estate. So normal Monopoly rules, you got to have all three or all the properties of that color to have a Monopoly. You can put houses and hotels and stuff like that. It's a really cool card game, and my friend Chris at work brought it. I think it was Friday. We had some time after around lunchtime, and we got jumped into a game of Monopoly Deal, and it was good, man. I haven't played it in a while, and it was really fun.
That's one of the first ones I got my hands on when we first kind of started expanding our gaming collection. I think Monopoly Deal is a really solid game. Another one that I like that we got at the same time, so it kind of pops into my mind, is Scrabble Slam. I don't think like that game.
Yeah,
do
I don't. Yeah, so Scrabble Slam, that was an interesting one because they came out around the same time. There was a Sorry card game. There was Scrabble Slam and Monopoly Deal. They all came around the same time. And I remember getting Scrabble Slam first, not really liking it. Like, we played a couple times, and I think Aaron liked it more than I did. Wasn't a big fan of it. We played it a couple times, and then it just sat on the shelf. And then Monopoly Deal, we got, I think, before we went on a vacation, and that was, like, instant success. We love that game. In fact, we played Monopoly Deal so often that we wore out the cards and had to rebuy the game. The cards were shredded.
Yeah.
So that's a really fun one. I remember taking that, because it's such a small footprint card game, I remember taking that to Applebee's before we got our food, or if we were waiting on a UFC event to start up at a local place, like, we would always play that before. That was just a really fun game.
That is a big, maybe they should do like a sponsorship thing there. Like Monopoly Deal, the official card game of UFC. I could see it now.
Yeah, because who doesn't want to play Monopoly card games while they're getting drunk right before the UFC match?
You're not wrong.
You know,
You know, I really like Scrabble Slam. I don't know, it's quick, and, you know, I don't know, just something about it makes me very happy. I like playing that game. I would be willing to play it almost any time. It reminds me of, to continue, of things that I'm reminded of during your section of what have you been playing. It reminds me of a game my friend Adrian taught me that involves Scrabble tiles. And I think when I looked it up on Board Game Geek, they call it Squabble. But basically, you flip over like seven tiles, or you flip over a number of tiles from a Scrabble set. So you just get all the tiles from Scrabble, flip them face down. And then you flip over the letters and you try to make words. And if you make a word, you keep those tiles. Well, then you flip over more tiles. And if somebody can find like a letter that they could add to a word you've already made, even with rearranging the letters, then they take your letters and they put it together with that letter.
Wow.
So like if I played Able and then a T came up and you're like, oh, table, then that would be something that you could add to your stack, and then whoever has the most tiles wins. We played it at a New Year's Eve party with he and his, we were just playing him at first. It was an interesting, he's Filipino. He has giant celebrations with his church, which is predominantly Filipino. They all came over to his dad's house because his dad's the pastor. And so there were tons of people that we did not know. So we just kind of sat down and started playing this game. And then his dad came over and just like started stealing our words and making these giant words. And like then the mom nice. Jumped in and like Sarah and I were totally dominated. But it was really a lot more fun than I thought it was going to be because he was like, yeah, we could do this. We don't really have the Scrabble board. And I'm like, that's weird. Let's see what we can do. But it ended up being like three games of it. And I was like, come on, we're going again. Like, I am going to do better than I did last time. I know I can do this. It was really fun. But anyway, that's a sidetrack. Back to what you've been playing, Ryan.
No, that's really cool, dude. We don't play Scrabble very often. In fact, I like Bananagrams a lot better than Scrabble. I think it's a better game. But Scrabble, if you have a Scrabble board laying around, that might be a fun variant just to throw down with. So
yeah, definitely.
Very cool. Josiah beat me again at Hero Realms yesterday. So I feel like, I don't know, is this what it feels like to have a kid who's good at sports and then you realize that they are shooting baskets much better than you? Is that how this goes? Like, it's like, oh man, dad's getting old. He's not able to like get out there on the court and really dominate anymore. I feel like this might be it. You know, he's beaten me two weekends in a row, like pretty badly. Right. In fact, he got me down to one health playing Hero Realms. He got me down to one health and then he just let me linger there for one turn. I mean, it was a real jerk move. The very next turn I was going to beat him
for a little bit.
Then he was like, yeah, he was like, I think I'll take you out this turn. I was like, man, what a jerk. Jeez, he's going to be 13 next week.
Oh man. Man. Yeah, it's that age where they start to get better at you than better than you at stuff. Like, I don't know that we're getting into some deep conversations here that I have absolutely nothing to share about. So,
yeah, no, it's all good. Somebody's going to be listening to this and being like, he really needs to be in therapy. It's good stuff.
We need some family counseling over there. It's crazy.
Yeah. And then we actually got to play. It is Earth Day. It's Sunday. We're recording before the week starts. And so it is actually Earth Day. So, Aaron, myself and Kendall, we got to play a game of, Kodama, which is Kodama, the tree spirits game. You're basically starting out with the trunk of a tree, which has a certain element on it. So like this turnaround, I was, caterpillars. So anything with caterpillars that extended off the trunk of that tree, I got points for. And if you continue branches that have similar elements, you score for those. Aaron ended up beating me by a couple points. It was a good game. There was a little back and forth there, which was nice. But that was a good game to play on Earth Day. So figured we'd bust out something like that. And you're going to be a fan of photosynthesis. So that's another earthy game to check out.
Yeah. Yeah, photosynthesis is one, you know, maybe that's one that we break out tonight. We still also haven't played Azul yet, so that might need to be something that we play, or, you know, Pandemic Legacy or Fugitive. I still haven't gotten her to play a second game of that. So there's a lot of options here on Earth Day, as once Sarah gets back from work, we'll definitely have to be playing something. But Ryan, I'm glad we got to share some of the games that we've been playing and then, you know, some of the games that maybe we've played in the past.
We wish we were playing.
Yeah, bringing out some Squabble conversation. But we've got a top five list in our next segment that I'm kind of excited about. So it's going to be a good one for us. So make sure you stick around for our second segment. And we're back, and this week our top five list is one that is a little amusing to me, and maybe we've hinted at it here and there throughout the history of this podcast, but this week we're going to go ahead and put it down on paper, or whatever the audio version of paper is.
We're going to put it on audio paper. That's a thing that we just created. Audio paper.
Yes. This week, our top five list is top five games that we love, but our wives hate. Now, yes. Ryan, it just so happens that our wives are the ones that we play games with the most. But I mean, you could substitute anybody else in here. If you've got a gaming group that you spend more time with, than necessarily your significant other. We've all got those games that we're like, gosh, I wish that they would want to play this more, but for whatever reason, those people don't really enjoy that particular game.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. Honestly, this list was pretty easy to come to because all I had to do was look at my wife and be like, hey, Aaron, what games do you really hate? And she was like, oh, and she just started rattling them off. I was like, we're good. So
yeah, there we go.
She looked at the game shelf and she immediately gravitated toward a couple of these. So our first one on this list will be Unlock. That is a favorite of mine. Rick, you've also played Unlock. And how do you and Sarah feel about Unlock?
Sarah actually, I think, likes Unlock. She doesn't have as much experience with it as I do. As I mentioned before, I actually used Unlock the first three games that Unlock or released under the Unlock title as an activity in my problem-solving unit that I taught to my Algebra 2 students. So this was something that was part of their, you know, they had to do it as an assignment. And so that was really cool to use, but it's definitely something that I could see Aaron not liking given her dislike for deduction games.
Yes. So Unlock is not necessarily a deduction game, but it's problem solving. You are given a deck of cards and you start with the first card in the deck and it basically starts you off with some sort of clue or you're looking for something. And as you go through the game numbers, you'll notice different numbers and you can pick up the card with the number on the back of it. Or as you solve puzzles, it'll give you a numerical numeric that you can work on to grab a card. So maybe if by putting these two elements together, you get the total of 67. So you'll pick up card 67. And if that was the correct answer, you'll unlock that room or unlock that puzzle or whatever it is. Right. The game plays really well. I love the game. We've played three different scenarios, and I've actually got one that I bought from the second series that I still haven't even opened, but I'm hoping to get that on the table soon. The problem with Unlock for me is that once you've experienced it, you're done. So it's kind of sad to me because I love the Unlock series so much, and then when you finish a game, you're like, well, I know the answer, and I can't go back. I almost wish we had one of those Men in Black brain wipe things so that I could go ahead and go back and play it again because it's a really fun game. Aaron does not like the Unlock series. The first time we played, I could tell her kind of waning at the 45 minute mark. She kind of like her interest started to die out because it's an hour long game. You're supposed to be able to complete it in around an hour. And if you're bad at it, like we are, it lasts a little more than an hour. And so the interest for her fades pretty quickly and she does not like it. And especially in a group, we've played it with a group of six people a couple times and I like it a lot, but she is not an alpha gamer in any way. She sits back and she watches. And so she ends up getting real bored with the game real quick. So
yeah,
Unlock is the first game that my wife does not like.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we're not here just to smack talk our wives or anything like that. I think
what we
want people to see is, you know, who might enjoy a game that we like and who really might not. And we want you, the listener, to think about, like, how do these descriptions of people match the people that I play games with? Because there are definitely, I very much like the Unlock series just like you, but I definitely see its shortcomings. You know, the one that I've got the most experience with is Squeak and Sausage. And that was the first one. My wife and I actually played that with our friend. I think you might have lent it to us. There are some of the puzzles that I don't like. Like they're not very well delivered in a card-based format, in my opinion. And then the end of Squeak and Sausage, I hated. I hated the end of that one. It was the worst thing ever I've experienced in a game. But I still want to play more of them because I like the concept and I feel like it would be a really enjoyable experience. So we're by no means, you know, trying to you know, shut down anybody for not liking these games. We all have our preferences, but just to kind of let you know before you make a purchase, these are kind of the kind of people that might like it. All right, enough of that.
Yeah, and also,
go ahead.
Also, these games, these are five games that are probably really good. These are really good games for us, but it, you know, like you said, it may not be a connection for everybody, as in, you know, our wives don't care for these games. And so, yeah, it's definitely not commentary on our wives or the games themselves. It's just interesting how in a marriage, you one person can love something so much, and then the other person can be like, this is repulses me.
Right, definitely. The next game that is on our list is one that I played with my wife, and immediately it went to the four trade list on BoardGameGeek, and that is Kahuna. Kahuna is a two-player game played on a small board that has a bunch of islands on it. And your job is to, it's actually really very abstract. You know, it's about building bridges across islands and stuff, but really it's kind of, where are your markers in comparison to another person's markers and things like that. But basically you've got three rounds, and you have a deck of cards, and, you play a card in order to either put a bridge down, that is of your color, connecting that island to any other island, then as you go through it, or you can use it, sorry, to remove your opponent's bridges from those islands. So as you go through, you kind of have to think about, you know, your cards being in order to make sure that you get the particular bridge placement that you want, because if you ever get a majority of the bridges for an island, it clears out any bridges that were connected to that island. And then you can kind of start a chain reaction, because if you remove, you know, if I remove your bridge from this major island, and then now on this minor island, you no longer have a majority, then you might lose connections that you had built there. And it just kind of causes a chain reaction. All of that abstract thinking, I think, is what Sarah does not like about this game. I personally like the idea of being able to think like five turns ahead and coming up with a plan that I'm going to go through. I think Sarah is not a fan of like missing. If you miss one little thing that your opponent is doing and they kind of ruin your plans that you had, I think that frustrates her pretty quickly. So that was something that she did not enjoy. So I personally like it. You know, my friend Adrian that plays games with me, I could probably break that one out with him. He plays like Santorini with me all the time. We've had a couple of duels that go back and forth in that game, and he really likes that. So there's probably, you know, other people that I could play that with, but I think there are other games I would prefer to play, like Santorini, with those kind of people. So Kahuna is one that I ended up trading away.
Our next one actually is a game that Aaron has. Do you know when you eat food and you say, no, this is really good, try it again. No, this is really good, try it again. Yes. No, this is the best of this food, try it again. I've done this with Kokoro for my wife Erin multiple times. So Kokoro is a flip and write game, I guess. It's not, there are no dice, so you're flipping a card over and you're drawing the, we've done a review for Kokoro on the website. And this was a Kickstarter project. It's a merging of a game called Avenue, which came out in 2015, I believe, and the Kodama characters, the Tree Spirit characters. So Aaron loves Kodama. I was like, oh, Kokoro is going to be a great merging of these two worlds, and she'll really like it. Not so much. The very first time we played it, she was like, this is a dumb game. And then I said, well, maybe you're not understanding. It's the end of the day. Maybe you're just not liking it. We'll play it again in a couple days. Play it again. We actually did a live stream for this on One Board Family on Facebook. If you can find that live stream, there is a shot of Erin looking in disgust at one point, because she's just like, why am I doing this? It's best. It's the best. It's, I mean, I love live streams for that.
Yes.
So Kokoro, while I love Kokoro, I've turned so many people onto this game. Rick, you and I have played it with the kids. You really enjoyed it. Multiple people at work have bought the game because I brought it in for lunch one time. Great game. And Erin hates Kokoro. She doesn't see the strategy in it and thinks that it's a little too random. And so she, every time I bring that out, she's like, "Nah, I'm good. I'll go like clean the garage or something.
I will and go do basically anything else I can.
I'll do anything but do this." Right. So
yeah, that's one I definitely enjoy, and I think you know it is a bit random. That I kind of had her hesitations before I played the game, but it does definitely. There's strategy involved. Like you have to think through what might come up, you know, what is going to happen, what has happened to be able to maximize your path and maximize your points. I really like that game. And maybe that could be one I eventually add to my collection, but, it sounds like I can just come to your house and I can play it then since, you know, Erin doesn't want to play it with
exactly.
you. Exactly.
We'll always have an empty. Yeah. We'll always have an empty spot at the table.
There you go.
So, but yeah, Kokoro is fun. It plays, what I love about it is plays up to eight players.
Right.
And honestly, if you have two copies of it, you can play as many players as you want.
Yeah.
And you're right. The strategy, you can, if you view it as, oh, it's just random, you're not going to see the strategy in keeping certain pathways open or making allowance for cards that you know that are eventually going to come up. There's you could think quite deeply about this game and really have fun with it.
Yeah,
so
definitely. Ryan, I believe the next one is yours as well.
So Bomb Squad. Let me tell you what Bomb Squad is. Bomb Squad is a box of anxiety, as it's been called around our house. Bomb Squad was one of those games that I bought, I think it was 2014 or 2014, somewhere around there. I bought it for, I was really interested in it. We went to a gaming shop in Tennessee and I saw a copy of it and I was like, "Erin, I really want this game." And I hadn't done a lot of research about it, but I knew that I liked the art style. I knew that I really liked the concept. So we picked up Bomb Squad. She bought it for me for my birthday and we ended up playing it about a week later. And the concept of the game is that everybody at the table is working to move this bomb searching robot through this building. And so there's a lot of different configurations. So you can play, we've actually only played on easier or more moderate boards than some of the harder stuff. We actually haven't even tried some of the harder stuff. Everybody is kind of like the game Hanabi, the card game Hanabi. Everybody is facing their cards outward toward everybody else. So the person sitting across from everybody else knows what cards I'm holding, but I have no idea what I'm holding. And you can only give one clue to the person holding those cards as to what they have in their hand. And you can point to them or you can say you have three of this color or whatever. There's a couple different ways you could kind of get people to rearrange their cards the way that you would want them to. And then on your turn, you're able to program. You can draw a card from your hand that you don't know what it is, but your fellow Bomb Squad members have told you what it is. You put it up under a programming guide and you program the robot. And the whole time a countdown is happening on your phone. There's a Bomb Squad app and it counts down however many minutes that scenario takes, and the bombs will explode if you don't get to them soon enough. There's also people to rescue. There's also different obstacles you have to get past. It is a hectic game and people are screaming at each other, especially when you're bad at communicating. This is one of those games that I've only busted out when I know I can communicate well with people. I tried playing it one time with this guy and we just sat there and we were almost telling him every turn what the same card was, mm-hmm. and he would never pick the card. And we couldn't tell him, play this card or we lose, because that's part of, you can't tell him that. You just have to nudge him. Well, we were nudging him so hard, we were like, you have to leave, where we can't play this with
you. You're not welcome anymore.
Yeah, and so Bomb Squad gives people anxiety.
Yeah.
It is anxiety in a box. And Erin has never had a good time playing that game.
Does Erin like other real-time games?
Not really. I think, and honestly, some of the games that you love, she would probably just have a huge aversion to, because I think the having to perform something in a certain amount of time very quickly or under pressure, that is not her jam.
Yeah, there's definitely a group of people that are not fans of the real time. You know, I don't think my mother-in-law, when we play Escape, she likes it. She enjoys it. But I think there are times where it's just like, I think she gets a little frustrated with it at times. I don't know. She would never tell us, I don't think. But, you know, that I've just felt like she wasn't quite enjoying herself as much. But, Escape. I love Escape. As a real-time game. And there's a few others. Like, we played Magic Maze all together. And I think, I don't know, Aaron seemed to like that one okay. I don't know if it was...
She liked Magic Maze at a lower player count. Mm-hmm. As more people got involved in that game, she had less and less fun. And she told me that afterwards. She told me that as the game went on, you know, when it was the three or four people, she was completely fine. But then when we got to six people, she was like, no, this... She said, that game is not for me.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, it's a good thing about all this is to find... You know, what is the element of some? If you can identify what is the element that you don't like in a game, it definitely will help you for future gaming sessions to know, like, yeah, this is what this game is about. I don't think I'm going to like it. Like, for instance, with Bomb Squad, it sounds, and you kind of already, you know, described it this way, like a real-time, more stressful version of Hanabi. If you don't like Hanabi, you're really not going to like this one. Like, and so go ahead and move on. You know, it's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Bomb Squad sounds like a fun game if you can find the right people. That can be another one that we add to the play when Ryan and Rick are together list.
Exactly. I think you would actually like it a lot because I think the communication aspect and then also the like trying to do something in a quick time seems right up your alley. So we'll definitely play Bomb Squad next time you're around.
Awesome. And our last one is kind of a legend.
This is a doozy.
Yeah, now in One Board Family lore. Because it is a game that we played together when we all went up to the cabin a few weeks back. So both Aaron and Sarah did not like this game.
Would you say hate?
I think hate would definitely be a word that could be used for this
game. I feel like
game.
It's an accurate
for them.
Accurate term. So.
And that game is Ladies and Gentlemen. Ladies and Gentlemen is a game I heard about through... Shut Up and Sit Down, and their review of it was fairly interesting, but talked a lot about how it's a game for couples, or you play kind of in couples, where it's one player in the partnership is doing one thing, and another player is doing another. So you end up with two groups playing like their own separate games, and then you come together at different times to interact and then you kind of have one final goal that you're trying to reach together. So Ladies and Gentlemen places you in kind of, I guess, Victorian times. It's supposed to be kind of this old-timey game where the women are just trying to buy fancy dresses to go and accessories and such to go to a party, and the men are... what you and I deemed factory-ing.
Yeah, you have to factory really hard.
Yeah, and that basically involves flipping over tokens that you will later sell that are different goods that you will sell for money at the end of the round, and then you use the money, and you get to tell, you have to tell your spouse what they can and cannot buy based on how much money you have. In the way that the game is set up, it is... strongly encouraged that you kind of involve yourself in the satire of this game. It is not intended to be a very like masculine, you know, men are in charge and, you know, this is the way it should be. That is how it plays, but it's done for laughs. It's not done as a serious thing. However,
if this game was put out in any time other than right now, I would imagine that this game was probably very serious.
Yes.
But because of what's the date on this game?
Like, when was it published?
Like 2 years ago.
I mean, it's not all that old.
So it's not a very old game. So it's,
I mean,
okay. So 2013.
Yeah.
At some point in the production of this, somebody brought up the fact that, man, this is real misogynistic.
Oh, yeah.
This is a real issue. And I don't think anybody will buy this game when they find out what it's about. But then they were like, no, this is a joke. It's satire.
Right.
And then they were like, I get it. Let's still publish
right.
it. Because if this was put out in any other time, I honestly believe that this would have been 100% serious. Like, men do the working, women do the buying, deal with
right.
it.
I mean, it feels like a redo, yeah, of a game that came out in, like, the 60s.
Yeah.
That, but, like, even, like, I'm looking at the Board Game Geek description. It's like, the more the players embody their characters, flirtatious, fashion-obsessed ladies, and rich, arrogant, pretentious gentlemen, the more fun and explosive the game will be. And I do think, like, I kind of wonder if we had played it to where the guys, because we played it with Kyla and Chris, and then you and I and our wives. I wonder if we had placed the guys in the position of the ladies and the ladies in the position of the guys, if it would have played any better. I don't think it would have. But
yeah, it still is it's not a broken game, but it's a game that hinges on the ridiculousness of men going to work and purchasing the clothing for the women. And then if you're not really able to communicate properly. So you're just like, the women are just handing over clothes and being like, buy this. And then in my case, I wasn't making enough money at the factory to buy the clothing that Aaron wanted. So she's trying to get a set of clothing and I'm sitting there saying, I don't have enough cash. Sorry, baby. You know, and it was really like, it was a real uncomfortable night. but we offset it with a lot of, me and you used our best British voices, which are not good at all. And we also talked about the servants a lot,
yeah.
which is not okay. So there's a lot of problems with this game, and rightly so. Our wives hate this game.
Right. And I think, like, there's a little, I don't want to go so far as to say, like, Cards Against Humanity side of it, because Cards Against Humanity is just straight terrible. Like, many of
yes,
the cards there are awful. But there is kind of this subversive, like, if you can embrace being a horrible person for comedy for
yes.
a little while, then this is a game, like, there are people out there that would love this game because of that idea. Like, we were talking about the servants, you know, for instance, one of them taking care of, like, your gangrene-infested leg. Like, and
yes.
that was something
yes.
that we joked about. And you and I were laughing to the point of tears. And the other people were laughing, I think, at us laughing, but also kind of
or very uncomfortable.
Feeling like these are two horrible men. And, you know, there is definitely nothing wrong with thinking that that is all horrible. I do think, though, that there are people out there that would enjoy such a game where, you know, you take on this persona, you pretend and understand that you are horrible people and you embody being a horrible person for laughs.
Yeah.
I do not think that I don't have enough friends like that to be able to break
you
this game out again.
You're saying that you have not surrounded yourself with miserable, terrible people who are pretentious. I feel like you've made bad life
yeah,
choices.
I guess so. And I mean, I can even, I've got friends that will break out Cards Against Humanity and laugh at that. I'm not sure that they would laugh at this. I think it's just a different kind of mental place that you have to go to. Again, I don't think it's horrible. I don't think, are we bad people? Maybe we are bad people. I don't know.
Maybe.
But I do think it's one, if you and I could find a couple other people that really know how to be awful and would play this again with us, I might do that again.
I will tell you, if you have a grandfather that you're struggling to get into games, if you have a grandpa that you're just like, you know, none of the games I've showed him have worked, maybe this is his deal.
Maybe this is it.
Maybe he, Maybe he looks back and he's like, it reminds me of the good old days.
It reminds me of a better time when the women would go shopping and I would do the work. And that's the part of it, too, is like, you know, the work that you and I and Chris were doing. You just flip over tokens. But, you know, like,
that's all you do. It's ridiculous.
And so, you know, the ladies' part of the game actually, to me, felt more complicated.
They had to make style choices and set collections, and they had to make sure they didn't have overlapping things or their designers didn't clash. Like, there was a lot of stuff that they had to focus
right.
on.
Right. I mean, I think as a piece of satire, this is actually a pretty good game. I do think, though, that you have to be in a particular position to appreciate that satire and not just go, oh, this all feels horrible.
Yeah. It was definitely, it's definitely a game that exists.
I'm glad we played it. I'm.
Oh yeah. I'm glad that we've played it, because now if I ever say, you know, Erin, do you want to play this game? And she's like, no. And I'll play, do you want to play this or Ladies and Gentlemen? She'll be like, okay, this. You know, I could just say anything.
You should buy a copy to keep on the shelf just as your...
Just in case. Just as my backup. Yeah. Hey, I only brought two games. I brought Kokoro or Ladies and Gentlemen. Which one to play?
Which one do you want to do?
I guess we're playing Kokoro. So.
Awesome. Well, Ryan, you know, I think we've got a good list, and, you know, we probably could come up with a few more. But, again, the major reason we wanted to talk about this is to kind of highlight that there are games out there that you might like that your gaming group might not, and that's okay. Just be aware as you're out there making your purchases. Maybe we'll need to do a backup list or a kind of companion list at some time, which could be games that we hate that other people like. Maybe we can kind of do that sometimes.
I think I could definitely, there are some games that Erin loves that I'm like, okay, you brought this one up seven times. I guess I have to play it now. So yeah. Cool. Well, Rick, we can be found. One Board Family can be found at oneboardfamily.com. You can find us online on Instagram, on Twitter, and on Facebook at One Board Family. And you can find us on YouTube. Just do a search, One Board Family, three separate words. And that'll about do it, man. Thanks so much for joining me on this rainy day podcasting. And just a heads up, we are in our ninth episode of our second season. We had originally said that we're only going to do 10 episode seasons, but we're having so much fun right now and we're getting great feedback from you guys. And so we're going to actually go to episode 15 this season. So you'll have six more episodes this season, and then we're going to take a little bit of a break over the summer and come back with some new content that is kind of crafted by you guys, because we're going to be asking for your feedback. Also, if you have a Game Doctor question, the Game Doctor is taking requests right now. We would love to fill some prescriptions. You can ask us a question about ask a question to the Game Doctors. Just message us either on Facebook or Twitter. You can message us on Instagram. You can send us an email to contact@oneboardfamily.com. Any way you choose. And that'll about do it.
Awesome, Ryan. Well, thank you so much. And until next time, we'll see you at the table.
Punchboard Media,
where we all
bring something
to the table.
Pull up a chair
at punchboardmedia.com.